WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Says so right here on my chest. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. We are at Coco's. I'd love to show you the crab cakes. Don ate them all. Did you eat them all?
I'm telling you, if you have not, again, to my county friends, right here on Harford Road, you can be here. It won't take you more than a half an hour from anywhere in Baltimore County, even Anne Arundel County. Coco's, baby. You want this crab cake.
All right, we got a full house here. We've eaten a lot of crab cakes. I still have some coleslaw for the road. I did eat all the french fries. Marcella, nice job on the fries. Ruffin Bell is our marketing executive from Coppin State. You've never been on a show, or have you ever been on?
No.
Oh, man, you're such a natural.
Man,
keep being natural.
Coppin, we've been partners for going on a decade now. We are the flagship for Coppin. And Mike Rosigliano, who lives three blocks from here.
Yeah, I walked over, yep.
They call you Mike here. No one calls you Mike.
I mean,
do you lie to him about your name?
My mom calls me Mike. That's about it.
I've never called you Mike.
And Coco's, that's all.
I'm never mad at you, so I'm never like, Michael.
Right, exactly.
Mike Rosigliano, sports cartoonist, legend, and dear friend of Don Moeller as well. I mean, I introduced you guys 30 years ago, right?
Were puppies.
Exactly.
So, Rasig, we're about to celebrate the 30th anniversary of my radio career. You knew me for almost a decade before then. I kissed Morgana over in your backyard over in Eastwood, right here in Lauraville. I kissed Morgana in Lauraville.
Exactly, yeah.
And Ruffin, you're Mr. Baseball, so you know Morgana. But I got real baseball people here. And Moeller, I'm going to let you, because you don't know Ruffin.
Let me tell you what I like first. He's going to say that's a Coppin shirt. You know, when I see that blue and gold in that nice
Catonsville
seat.
Comets.
That's a Comets, man. That's a Catonsville Comets.
Right.
I'm focused.
By the way, I was at the Wise on Maiden Choice Lane the other day.
Nice Wise.
Yeah, great Wise. My wife and I are in there. I got some pumpkin ice cream. And on the way out, I looked up. And, you know, all the Wises have that stuff in the front where they sell local stuff. Everything they sell is Catonsville Comets.
There you go.
And I was going to, like, get a hat and, like, surprise you. Like, if I'm wearing it, you'd be like, where'd you get the Catonsville hat, you know?
Nice. Well, you know, I'm gonna change it up on you a little bit because you don't like the green room. You don't like to know what's coming
he
next.
He hates segments where we don't green room. He hates that he doesn't know who you are.
Here we
like,
are.
Like, he hates it.
Wow, he's in his element.
Yeah. Here we are roughly 1 week before the holiday, and this will age well even after the holiday. I'm going to ask each one of you. Thanksgiving fan, not a Thanksgiving fan, and what are your Thanksgiving traditions?
Definitely a Thanksgiving fan.
Look at him. The man's an eater.
Yeah.
Come on. I could have told you that.
I don't miss a meal. Thanksgiving, you know, I enjoy our family coming together. It's very big. My mother loves the holiday.
How many folks in the house on Thanksgiving?
I'd say between 15 and 20.
I'm coming over. That means I'll have enough food for me.
That's a good crowd.
15 or 20. And, you know, it's just a great time. You know, from being a kid to now being one of the grown-ups.
You get to sit at the big table?
Yeah. All you right. get to stay in the room for the conversations.
What's your favorite side dish?
Cranberry sauce.
Oh, the jelly or the real?
I don't know.
You like it out of the can?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
My wife likes the gel out of the can.
Yeah,
I told this story today. I'm from Dundalk, and we grew up poor. I talk about it all the time. But I never knew cranberries were like a real berry. I thought there were two kind of cranberries in the world. The kind that Ocean Spray.
You know, right.
And then the...
Yeah, of course.
Out of the can. My wife gets the real cranberries.
I like
she gets
the real.
Oranges. She has. She gets
love
walnuts.
That. Yep. Right.
She does the sugar. She boils the hell out of it for a day and a half. And a week and a half later, when that turkey is like wood, it's all dried
right.
up. You can baste on that cranberry, brings it right back to life.
Oh, man, you're like Ross and Friends. You know, you're gonna make the moist maker or something. You're gonna go for the moist maker.
See, I tee you up a baseball conversation, and you don't even talk baseball.
I want to get my.
I want to hear Rasig's Thanksgiving
right.
first.
So yeah, I mean, I love Thanksgiving also. This is going to be a great Thanksgiving for us because my two new grandsons are going to be in town
twins.
For this identical twins, Frank and Red. Fred. I mean, Frank and Fred, and we call him Fred.
How old are they?
They're 7 months old.
Oh, man.
First Thanksgiving for them.
They look like Rasig, too. They look like little Rasigs.
It's going to be a lot of fun. My favorite side dish is stuffed artichokes my cousin Millie used to make, which were amazing.
What are they?
It's a family recipe.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
What do they stuff them with?
Oh, just breadcrumbs and Italian stuff. It's really good. My neighbor makes a great stuffed artichoke also. And my wife makes an awesome cream of crab soup on Thanksgiving, and I love that too. And I make, so I can't cook at all, guys, but my wife one year told me, you have to cook something for the dinner. So I make these like mozzarella toasts that I saw in a recipe. It's really easy. And everyone gloms to these mozzarella toasts and fills up before the Thanksgiving dinner, where my wife gets really ticked off about it.
Because it's your recipe.
They won't. No, but yeah. Because it takes me 10 minutes to make mine.
You can't make them now.
I've been to Don's house for Thanksgiving.
They would crush me if I didn't make them.
Like, he's got, name the food group, he's got it. He has every, you want corn, he's got corn. You want peas, you got peas. You got green beans, you got green beans. You want gravy, you got three different
broccoli
kinds.
Broccoli casserole. Sauerkraut.
So, for me this year,
green bean casserole.
And I can't have it all. But I keep saying to my wife, I really want to get away from tradition. I want to do something different. Not different with the turkey or the cramp, the things I love, but like this artichoke thing.
Yeah.
Never heard of anybody with serving a stuffed artichoke on Thanksgiving.
You know, there are two things. It's funny. My wife's, Linda's from South Jersey. So their tradition that nobody down here had heard of or knew. They served creamed onions every Thanksgiving with Thanksgiving dinner. Every year at Thanksgiving
dinner. It's like a gravy to go with it.
It's like a white sauce.
To go with the turkey.
Really, really good. And, of course, when she came down from South Jersey, grew up in Woodbury, to Western Maryland College, and she saw people having sauerkraut. She thought everybody had truly, like it was a joke.
Never have I heard of sauerkraut with turkey until I got down here.
That's what she said.
The heck is that?
That's what she said. Sauerkraut, what are we doing?
So, man.
Hey, well, it's my very, very favorite holiday. Let's talk a little baseball, Nestor, with these guys, because We're about to come up. We're probably going to be a work stoppage, right? I mean, as we look at it, hopefully not.
Everybody I've talked to this week, and I'm out of the loop. I don't even know what they're fighting over. I 30 years ago, I knew it all. Just play.
Well, I'm going to tell you one of the proposals that, and I want to get these guys' reaction, your reaction. It's funny. I sent my grandson the article last night because this service time thing makes my grandson absolutely insane. The fact that you have these potentially really good players in the minor leagues and you might not bring them up to start the clock sends my 14-year-old over the edge, who is a baseball fanatic. Well, I saw one of the proposals, and on first glance, again, I didn't study it. I'm not a baseball labor attorney. I'm not Joe Foss. But when I looked at it, it was to wipe out the service time requirement altogether and have a blanket rule that everybody's a free agent at 29 and a half. And I thought, wow. And their point was, for a Rutschman, it wouldn't change much because he's going to be 24 or 25 when he gets here.
Right.
But for a Grayson Rodriguez or a D.L. Hall, that could be a game changer.
Sure.
Because there's no service time requirement. You don't become a free agent until 29 and a half.
Exactly.
But then everybody's a free agent.
Right, but it
does. Well, they're going to do away with arbitration, too. I go to war for that.
Yeah,
I'm Marvin Miller at that point, you know?
I would love it just from a fan standpoint because, we're being denied being able to see these great players for a year or two. And so, we have no money in the game. We just want to see the guys play and see our team. And I see our team play well, you know?
I don't know that you have to do away with arbitration, though.
Why would they want to do away with arbitration.
Oh, I said I think there's going to be a work stoppage. I mean, what do you think? Are you following this, though?
I haven't been following as much, and especially when they drop a whole bunch of the minor league teams.
Right.
Frederick's gone.
For me, that was, I was a baseball fanatic, and I slowly have been pulling away, and the connection for myself and my kids, we were going to minor league games.
Right.
You know, and the year when they cut everyone, we had planned to make sure we saw Hagerstown Frederick. We're regulars at Aberdeen, but we were going to make we were going to go out and see everyone else, and then all of a sudden they were gone, and it's like, you know, I mean,
this is the hardest part for me because you're a baseball guy, you're a baseball guy. My last name's Aparicio. You don't call me to go to games. You don't call me. Nobody calls me to go to games. I live two blocks from the stadium. People aren't coming to the. You go to a game this year?
No, not.
Did you go to a game this year?
Yeah, I went to three.
You went to three?
Yeah.
What was your experience at the three?
I mean, my experience was great because I sat, you know, right behind home plate.
So
three of those
Don
games.
Goes, you went, go good.
It was fantastic.
right.
And they won two of the games. So, yeah, it was fun. You know, the three games were fun.
You know what? Interesting, get the take of the group. And I yearn for this. And Rasig, I don't know if you were like this or not, or Ruff, if you were like this. When I was a little kid, and that's a long time ago, but I can remember as soon as the bell rang at the end of the school day during the World Series, we would run home and turn the game on. And we might even have been sneaking a little transistor radio. So the nuns,
I had the same exact memory. So running from my bus stop
to get home for
the Royals-Yankees games in 80, 81, that era.
Now, for the last few years, and it's not about the teams. In other words, this year I thought there were two good teams. I mean, two good storylines. I mean, here the Braves were awful at midseason.
Yeah, sure.
They were under 500. And they made a few moves, and they caught lightning in a bottle, and they end up beating the Cheaters. So it wasn't the teams so much as I watched off and on, but I did not sit glued, and I'm curious about you, I did not sit glued to every pitch in the World Series. And it makes me sad that I didn't, but I don't know what it is about this version of baseball that's not as exciting to me as the baseball when I grew up.
I think part of it is, I think Major League Baseball, even though they talk about they're working with the communities, I think they really are separating. The players, to me, aren't in the neighborhoods like they used to. I mean, I remember when T-Bone Shelby came to my second grade class. I mean, Eddie Murray came to school. Different things like that.
Where'd you go to school?
Went to Gilman for elementary. I was all over the place. I went to like three elementary schools.
But your love of baseball, you're talking about something that happened in second grade with T-Bone Shelby in 1982 or 81, whatever
was. I mean, that was awesome, you know. Going to L. Rod Hendricks baseball camp, and when they would bring
this guy's got a grandson named Brooks.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I mean, like, literally, right? I mean, literally.
And another grandson that's at Gilman who is playing basketball and can't wait to start cranking it up this spring in their baseball program.
Yeah.
It's a baseball thing.
Yeah, the connection, though, that to me there was a stronger connection. And when Adam Jones left the Orioles, for me that was like, to me that felt like he was the last connection.
I'm with you on that. That's my favorite Oriole.
What'd you like about Adam Jones, Rasig?
I mean, his playfulness, obviously, he was a terrific player. He stuck with our team when we were bad. You know, there's nothing bad I can say about Adam Jones. I always thought they should have kept Adam Jones. And it drives me crazy when guys like Adam Jones are released from a team, even in a rebuilding program, when he wants to stay and he can clearly help a rebuilding team, you know. So,
well, especially when it was over a couple million bucks for him where he had to go to Japan. If Adam were here, though, and I hope, you know, Adam never was allowed to talk to me because he worked for Peter. So you have to treat me like ish if you work for Peter. Otherwise, you're not right. So Adam was always side-dooring me when he would see me. And one time he saw me up at Citi Field at the All-Star game, and they're out playing Pepper with their All-Star. He said, come out with me, talk, because he could never talk to me here because I never had a press pass. And he's playing catch, somebody out there. And there were five Orioles there that year, so it must have been J.J. Hardy or whatever, one of those guys. And he said to me, and he's like chewing gum, you know how he is, throwing ball. He's like, why does big man hate you so much, man? And I'm standing out on the field. This is in 2013, maybe, right? 13, 14, whatever
so
it was.
So great.
And he says, why does the big man hate you so much? And I turned to him. I'm like, You expect me to explain this to you in the next 30 seconds?
While you're playing catch.
I literally wrote the Peter Principles. If you've read any of my work, the Peter Principles, I literally wrote that for Adam Jones because he said, what happened here? Why do people hate the owner? Why does he hate you? What happened before I got here, you know? And I said, that's going to take a book. So I literally dedicated it to Adam Jones. But Adam Jones, if he were sitting here right now, and I follow him on Facebook, every day he's got a Kobe steak coming in from Japan right now. He loved Japan. He loved playing in Japan. His wife, you know, obviously her
Wonderful.
Father played for the Redskins and like all. And I know him very well as well. I don't know Adam at all. But I would say as a life enrichment
thing. And his wife's a
thing,
wonderful young lady.
Audie, right?
Right.
Don't know Audie at all. But I would say their experience in Japan, from what I see, was the greatest thing that ever happened to him. To not be here losing 110 games with his face on the wall. And he might not say that because he'll be coy or whatever, but if he were having a third beer at the end of the bar with me, he would say, going over to Japan, they did me a favor allowing me to go see the world because I can see how much he loved it.
And one of the few games that I actually watched this year, flipping through the channels, watching Japanese baseball, I'm like, that looked like Adam Jones. And I said, let me go back. And it was Adam. We sat there as a family and watched the rest of the game.
Yeah, because
Adam Jones
yeah.
was in the game.
Well, I'll have to try to get him on that as career's over. And, you know, Peter's eating pudding and can't get mad at him anymore for, like, telling the truth.
Well,
but I would agree with you. I said at the time, you're going to let Adam Jones walk because he's old and no one's going to give him $1 million. No one's going to hire him. He's going to wind up playing for a song and a dance. For cab fare for what you're giving Chris
Well,
Davis.
And it's interesting, isn't it, in the change of the game, that one of the things, and I think Adam did speak openly about this a couple of times, it's what becomes in vogue and out of vogue. And the cyber metrics, Adam Jones was never going to grade highly on the cyber metrics.
He didn't walk enough.
He didn't walk enough, and he was always going to swing at the slider out of the strike zone. Now, at the end of the year, he was still going to hit 285, driving 85 to 90 runs, and hit 25 home runs. He was still and play pretty close to gold glove caliber, but he didn't fit that modern model. Where Nestor and I disagree a little bit, and you guys can weigh in, is I do think under Mike Elias, Sid Medel, the group that's there now, I think they are close. I mean, I think they've rebuilt. If you're going to rebuild a house that's been knocked down, you got to start with the structure. You got to start underground and the foundation. And it seems to me the foundation is there. Now the proof's going to be in the taste of the pudding in terms of whether or not we can bring it all together and find the arms when necessary. Because it seems to me the focus on the young college-ready bats is a recipe for success. And
well, does that get you to the ballpark? You know, what's going to be the night you're going to go back?
Rushman will put people
and really
in their seat.
Pay $40 for your kids to go sit in a middling seat, right, for a Twins game on a Tuesday night because they're getting a bobblehead or whatever they're doing. What's going to get you back? If 107 losses is not getting me back.
If Rushman, right. Let's ask these guys. If Adley Rushman is Buster Posey and not Matt Wieters, remember we hoped Matt, when that was a solid player, we hoped Matt would be Buster Posey. He wasn't. If Adley Rushman is Buster Posey and we're good, then I think you put people in the seats.
I think the we're good part is the main part.
Right,
really.
Right.
You know, we win games, people will come back
to
the ballpark. I don't even think it has that much to do with Ash. I'm anxious to see Ashley Rushman, but I think it has more to do with
a
winning team in this town. People will.
They'll be back.
They'll be back.
Winning and playing hard.
I mean, Manny Machado playing, not running out ground balls, right?
If they're playing, you know, I guess the term is old school ball, you know, getting dirty, hustling. You know, that's always been a brand of Baltimore baseball, at least as far as I can remember.
Absolutely.
You know.
One of the things that's difficult, and I don't know if you all share my point of view on this, I've said to Nestor many times, one of the problems we have right now is moving forward. We don't know if Brandon Hyde can manage or not. My gut says he seems to do a lot of things right. He seems to have the managerial part right. He seems to have the relationship part right.
Pitching.
But we have. But he didn't have a team, so we don't have a clue whether he can manage or not. Right?
True. But on the surface, he strikes me as a guy that has a lot of the components you want in a manager. You know.
But
that's
why
they brought him in. That's why they brought him in.
Right.
Ruff and Bell is here from Coppin. Mike Rossigliano, Rossig as we call him, one of our dearest friends, and of course, former Baltimore County Executive Don Mullen. Did you guys ever do a huddle together back in 92?
I don't. We probably
you were on
did,
the original huddle. Well, Rossig drew, when the team came, the Sutcliffe game in 1992.
Oh, yeah.
Broadcast that day from the top of the Holiday Inn revolving rooftop bar outside. And you drew a piece of art and called the Bird's Nest Cafe is what they called it. He called it the Bird's Nester Cafe. And if I really would have thought about WNST, I would have called it The Nest had I really been thinking about it for the Birds and the Ravens. But Coppin has been our partner for a number of years now. Give me a little Coppin. You're open. Your kids are back on campus. We're playing. We're doing normal things.
We
weren't this time last year doing normal things.
We're in full swing. Basketball season's definitely started. Our volleyball team is in a great position.
I got the shirt.
Our volleyball team, we start the MEAC tournament this weekend. There's a good chance we can win it all. We feel very strong.
Wow.
We have the conference player of the year in Mimi Coleman, and Ashley Roman was defensive player of the year. So we got the two top awards for the conference for volleyball. I mean, the ladies can play. You know, if you don't watch volleyball, our ladies can play. Right. And it's exciting.
I love that.
It is exciting to watch.
Are the students into it?
Yes.
The students are into it?
And we've lost a little bit of crowd before because of COVID. Before COVID, we were starting to get to 300-400 in attendance for volleyball games. We're building back up to it, but I think Coach Walsh has done a great job with the ladies that he's brought in. And like we were just talking about with the O's. They're winning.
Yeah, when niche sports, I remember when Towson hit gymnastics and were doing well over there with Filbert. They would pack them in, and people would come for you'd say gymnastics or wrestling, off programs or whatever. But when there's a buzz on campus for a winning program, kids talk to kids and they want to come out and be a part of it. And volleyball is exciting in person.
I think it's fantastic.
It's a great sport.
Build it and they will come. And just staying along that same line, have you guys been to a collegiate bowling match?
Now we're going to get into Danny Wiseman's story.
I had the bowling coach on. I've had her on, so yes.
I have been to the White House bowling alley. I'll tell you right now, Ruff, I've been to that. But I'd love to come to a college.
Is it duckpin or 10-pin?
It was 10-pin.
All down, right, just checking.
Which president?
Was serving at the time? Obama.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's cool.
For sake, inquiring minds want to know.
Did you bowl with Obama?
Michelle called you one day and said, "Hey, Mike, come on over."
It's a long story, but we knew someone that worked there that got us an in to go bowl at the White House bowling. That's how it happened. But yeah, it was really fun.
Rasig, how does somebody become if they're out there? I knew a lot of kids, really talented kids, artistic kids, loved art. Give us your journey to becoming really one of the preeminent editors. I mean, you're as good an editorial cartoonist as there is out there. How did your journey get you there?
I mean, I was a Mad Magazine fan growing up, so that was my... I didn't really want to be a newspaper cartoonist. I wanted to be a Mad Magazine.
You wanted to be Alfred E. Newman?
I wanted to be the guy that drew Alfred E. Newman.
Right.
Yeah. But the path there was through newspapers to kind of try and... And prior to that, I worked as an editor and an artist for Crack Magazine. So I never did make it to Mad. I've interviewed at Mad, but I had a wonderful career.
Tell them how you got your job at Crack. This is the greatest story ever. Tell them how you sent the piece of clothing. Go ahead. Tell them.
So
this is the greatest story ever.
I zeroed in on Crack as a place I could work for out of college because I had this kind of background, and they were interested, but not interested enough, so I started sending them all my possessions on a daily basis. I would mail them to Florida, which is where it was.
Send them a shoe.
One a day, dirty laundry included, every day, a different thing. And the last day, I made a papier-mâché dummy, like kind of like the Ursay dummy, but their mascot, their Alfred E. Newman, Sylvester, put it on a plane to Florida. They got to the plane, got the dummy, and called me up and hired me.
That was it. They said, we're hiring.
This guy's freaking
we're
nuts.
We're hiring this guy. He'll fit right in.
You've seen Mike Ricigliano's sports cartoon work is because he sent a paper mache dummy to Florida.
And dirty yeah, underwear.
I might have been a volleyball player.
Ricig, is there, I love editorial cartoons and the work of you and your comrades who do that stuff. Is there a future for editorial cartoonists in a digital media world?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. I know, again, I'm not really an editorial cartoonist. I'm an editorial sports cartoonist. And I think there's still a lot of good editorial cartoonists in newspapers, including our own Cal in at the Sun. But for sports cartooning, anyway, it's a dead art. I mean, there's hardly a one left.
So you're a dying breed?
Oh, yes. And the New York Times did a big article on it in which they could find three sports cartoonists in the country at the time.
Wow.
And I was one of them. And it was called The Dying Art of Sports Cartooning. But I know people that are doing online editorial cartooning, so...
Well, you've got this creative gene, Mike. And I'm trying to think. I don't think it's not a faucet. You don't turn it off and on, right? So do you still wake up, or when you watch a sporting event, you still get an idea and go, man, I don't know if I'm going to get it published, but I got to do this cartoon. How does your brain work?
It's more like I wish I had a venue to put this out in, you know? And so, it's kind of a mixture of that plus, just as you guys know, deadlines. So if I know I have to get an idea by a certain date, then I just kind of force myself to kind of think of an idea that, you know, that I listen to the sports talk shows, and that's how my modus operandi
If you had to take one out of your many, many outstanding cartoons, and you had to say one and say, this is the quintessential Ricigliano. Which
the Bob Irsay bullseye on my wall.
I didn't ask you. I asked him.
I mean, it probably would be an Irsay one, but I loved drawing Peter Angelos. And also, you know, Nestor, we almost did a thing where I did. And the other thing I'll say is, for 3 years, I got to draw the bird on the front of the Sun, which I'm not the only guy that has done that. There's been a history of people that did that bird that would indicate... And it was
the happy bird, the bird with the rain, the umbrella, and it rains.
The ornithologically correct
bird. The crying bird, the angry bird.
It was such an honor for me to do that. And Ness and I had talked about one time doing the same type of thing
for the website,
but with little Peter Angelos's doing it.
I have this.
And they really were funny. I mean, it was such a funny idea.
So my idea was, is the bird happy or upset about the win or loss last night? You would see Peter
exactly
on the front of the website, angry, pissed,
right,
counting his money.
It's a great idea.
It's
too bad.
He drew 100 little Peters for
it
me.
It was so much fun drawing Peter Angelos. I love drawing that guy. Yeah.
We're at Coco's. We're having a crab cake. Ruffin Bell is here. Mike Ricigliano, Don Moe. Don, I want to tell you, because you were really getting in on Ricig here and asking him all these tough questions. I had Ricig on when this New York Times story happened, which has been a number of years, four or five years ago now.
Yes.
And I had Ricig on, and I mean, we're beer buddies, wing buddies, sports buddies, music buddies, lifer buddies. I had you on, and we weren't, it wasn't video, it was audio, and he started lecturing. And, like, I got 2 minutes into it, and he was giving me, like, theory on art and stuff, and I'm like, dude, are you teaching? And you're like, yeah, I've been teaching for years. And I'm like, I've never thought of you professorial, but like, you teach people this skill.
I teach cartooning. I used to teach right over here at St. Francis, right in the neighborhood, 6th through 8th graders. And mostly now I teach adult education cartooning at Towson and
See, he doesn't even brag about it. You didn't know that, did you?
I love it.
I didn't know it either.
I'm just going to say, what's the most important skill in the toolbox that if someone is going to be pretty good as an amateur cartoonist, what do I need to bring to the table, Mike?
Be funny. No, that's it. That's my bottom line anyway, is be funny, be timely, but be funny, you know, and so you don't have to be an amazing artist to be a great cartoonist. We've seen many cartoons in the New Yorker or anywhere where it's maybe crudely drawn but with a great idea and a funny idea and great editorial ideas. You can bring a cartoon.
I told you he's a great teacher. You're getting stuff out of him. When you start taking him in his lane,
I love
it's different.
Well, let me
you
tell
can't
you.
Keep talking about cartoon. You got to go back to Ruff. Ruff.
Well, you're going to love this because I'm actually going out to dinner tonight with some friends who I drive insane over this issue. And it's not their issue. It's my issue. And, Mike, you'll understand it probably better than most. They love sending me the occasional cartoon from the New Yorker.
Oh, God, now, that's the best.
See? And I've got to tell you, whatever genetic thing in my brain, I have yet the next New Yorker cartoon that I laugh at will be the first.
Really?
And I think I love funny. I feel like the guy in Good Morning Vietnam. I know.
Don, maybe you don't like cartoons.
I don't get it.
Don,
what am I missing?
That's the most shocking thing that I've heard today, because that is the funniest. Now, it wasn't my sense of humor growing up, but as an adult, it's just, they are just amazing cartoons.
I try, because I actually want to make my friends happy and say, it was so damn funny. And I'll even say to my wife, I know it's funny, and I like
why
funny.
Why is it not funny to me?
There's a kind of a not that you're not subtle, Don, but I mean there's a subtlety to New York cartoon.
Don Bowler, former Baltimore County executive, Mike Sigliano, our artist and cartoonist and friend, and of course Ruffin Bell from Coppin. What's going on with Coppin other than a lot of games are airing here at WNST, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that our students stay busy with the community. Actually, the Afro newspaper featured our baseball team.
Awesome.
For working with James Mosier, Little League,
during
the fall. He's doing well.
Sherm's a wonderful. Sherm, his son was murdered a few years ago, tragically, and we talked so much. We had the mayor here. We talked to Corey about crime and stuff. My heart. Sherm's a good man.
Yeah, he's doing well overall, and, you know, they're gearing up for the season, and, you know, our kids, you know, they're resilient, you know. They've made it through COVID.
Boy,
you know, they're focusing on their futures, you know, academically.
How big is Coppin? You know, for our audience, give them a sense.
We're at about 2,200 students full time.
Historically black, college and university.
We're HBCU, one of four in the state of Maryland. Division One. I'm an alum of Coppin, class of '99. You know, love my home.
That's Coppin, not Comets. That's not Catonsville, just to make sure.
I know. You know what, Ruffin? It's interesting you mentioned the HBCU, and I think we might have had this discussion, Nestor, with another guest on the show. I always say that nothing is ever as easy as it seems, and I had a very thoughtful person say recently that the whole idea of free community college, which a large part of the Democratic constituency is very supportive of, there were a group of advocates from the HBCUs who said, wait a minute, you got to understand, that may have a fairly significant impact on our enrollment, and we need to think this through. And I had never thought, it was just another example of there, things might be
unintended consequences.
Might be more complicated than we think.
Yeah, and a lot of HBCUs, you know, their history is about bringing in students that normally would not get looked at a four-year school. It's taking the kid off the street, molding them, building them up, and then when they graduate, you know, they're doing big things in the community. So, you know, times have changed, you know, standards have changed, and I think part of the challenge for HBCUs and a lot of schools, the level or the quality of education from our public schools is not the same that it was not even 10, 15 years ago, let alone 20 or 30 years ago. Kids aren't learning the same amount of information.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of kids that are graduating high school but aren't ready for college. The number of kids that have to take developmental courses across the board, it's ridiculous. So, you know, that may turn away a kid that sees, well, if I go to a four-year school, I may have to take 2 years of developmental courses, and I haven't even started on my degree yet. You know, when we talk about unintended consequences, there's limits on the financial aid when a kid is in that right. boat. And so now the kid might not be able to graduate because they've maxed out their financial aid. So, I mean, there are a lot of different aspects and a lot of different things that play into it.
But miracles are happening on West Baltimore every day, right?
Every day. What? And, you know, the HBCU settlement, we're all looking forward to that, to, you know, remedying some of the issues from the past and, you know, looking to move forward.
What year was the cop in 15 to
97.
So you were there. You were there.
I was a student there.
Well, you know, I got pictures of Fang in the studio with all those players. And here's the thing, and I'll leave it at this because this is colleges and paying players. I have pictures of Fang and 15 of the kids that just came back from Pittsburgh where they had won, right, and then lost, right, sitting in my studio all eating pizza. And I'm thinking, I broke the rules. I fed them free pizza. I broke the rule. I could have gotten Fang in trouble for that. That's how crazy the college rules
were.
And just this past October, we renamed our court, Fang Mitchell Court.
Nice, great.
Ron Fang Mitchell Court.
Fang's still going to come on the show. He hasn't been on the show yet.
One of the legendary figures in the state.
Right? Yeah, I can hear Fang right now. Come on.
Truly, I've drawn him. I've drawn Fang. You
there
know,
you go.
One of my
there you go.
Without a doubt.
I didn't do nothing over there, you know.
That was a great day to see Coach come back.
So that's what coaches say on the record, off record.
About time they honored me over there.
Right. Yeah.
All I did for them over there.
Well, I heard we actually got a tear out of Coach there was a dedication video. I heard that we may have gotten a tear out of that, and that was like, you know, it was a great day. It was a great celebration of Coach Mitchell, and you know,
now I want to have him on.
So Nestor, we got a tear out of Coach Mitchell, and we got a new side dish for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Stuffed artichokes. All right, bottom line.
All over Sigliano.
It's Thanksgiving week. We're going to be Black Friday. We're going to be letting ourselves play with the Maryland Lottery in Harford County with Harford County Executive Barry Glass. We'll be at Conrad's, and then on the 3rd of December, we bring it back to Cockeys. We'll be at Pappas. All right, favorite pie, Thanksgiving, go.
No, man, I'm a pecan guy.
Go.
Sweet potato.
Pumpkin pie with whipped cream.
There you go.
Yes. I love apple, and I want to do it, but I want some mincemeat. I want a mincemeat pie this year.
Are you ready for this? Guess who's making the pies at our house?
Linda Moeller.
No, she's not. She makes everything else. I'm stepping up.
You're the pie man.
I'm stepping up.
I wouldn't trust the crust. Don't trust the crust.
Rodney at Dangerously Delicious Pies. Here I come.
Rodney put in the oven last night. I saw it. Don Moeller from a Baltimore County executive, my dear friend Ruffin Bell of Coppin State, and of course Mike Rosigliano, the great sports cartoonist and educator. Here as well, and grandfather of twins.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving. My thanks to Marcel and everyone here at Coco.
Yes, you never let your hair down. You never let your hair down. Come on.
For Rasig.
This is for me.
Rasig wants to see my hair.
Oh, my Lord.
There it is. Look at that, man.
Lock up the women and children.
Show's over, everyone.
Scary.
We're WSTA and 1570 Towson Baltimore. We're back for more right after this.
It was a lot of fun. Ruff, you are awesome on